International League for Peace and Freedom, The Wake Up Call. I'm Dick Paddock, your host, and Lori Hoyt is sitting across from me as co-host. We're settling in and waiting for another guest to show up. No? Okay. WCOMLP, Chapel Hill and Carrboro. So if you're ready, let's go.
You know, may or may not be coming. I thought she was, but we didn't confirm. And so we're going to get started. This is the Wolf Radio Show, our wake-up call. We're glad to be here. We're here every Wednesday from 5 to 6 o'clock. And we have usually a guest, and we have a very good guest tonight. We're delighted to have our, I guess it's former mayor.
Mm.
Or, yeah, oh, boo-hoo. Mark Kleinschmidt just recently stepped out of the mm-hmm. mayor's shoes.
Right.
And therefore he had time to come. And so we're going to be talking about Mark and his life and about being a mayor and the challenges and the warts and the good things. And so, Mark, it's good to have you here.
Well, thanks, Lori. Thanks, Dick, for having me. I appreciate it. I'm looking forward to our conversation.
Yeah, we are too. So I don't know if you've ever been on a show.
I don't think, not this show. I've been on the station before on other shows, but not on your show.
Yeah. Well, you know, when knowing you're a mayor and was working too, I guess we just always figured you were really busy, and then we just decided, hey, this is a good time to have Mark on the show.
It is a good time because those who are serving us tonight, are serving us presently, our current mayor and council, they're getting ready for a work session that is going to be at the library tonight. So I don't have to worry about that.
You don't have to worry because, you know, it's a job, and maybe we can talk about. I know I've been to some council meetings, and I thought, how do they do that? I go, and whatever my issue is, stay for that and happy mm-hmm. to run out the door. And I know some of those sessions go on to 10, 11.
Sometimes midnight, 1 o'clock.
And I've thought, where do they get the stamina? And then I know a lot of people on the council or as mayor have other jobs too. So maybe we could start off talking about what it's like to be a mayor in this
sure.
town. It's a pretty big town.
It's a big town. It's a big task. And I think the town of Chapel Hill is so much bigger than its actual population. You know, I mean, if you look around the country at other towns of 60,000 people, we have a much bigger influence than other like-sized communities. Part of it's because of Carrboro, like where we are right now. It's another 20,000 people that the world kind of considers to be part of our Chapel Hill.
Yeah,
and the kind of the greater Chapel Hill area. And then, you know, there are folks all around us, including North Chatham. And, you know, until you get to the border of Hillsboro, they think they live in Chapel Hill, you know. So there's everybody around here, you know, identifies with our town. And but more than just that, because our community is host to the University of North Carolina and, you know, internationally recognized institution of higher learning, people know our town's name because it's in the name of this extraordinary university.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can say Chapel Hill, people know exactly where you're talking about. And, you know, when you talk about these meetings that we go to, because our town is kind of big for its britches, the work of being on the council, but particularly the work of being mayor, those meetings you talk about, that's kind of like, as far as the time and energy that it's taken, that I've had to put into and invest in being mayor, that's just the part of the iceberg that's sticking up out of the water. So it looks like it's really big. It is. Those meetings are long. There are lots of them. But the work that I did over the 6 years as mayor and 8 years on the council, really most of it went on outside of those meetings. So, it's
Well, maybe you can tell us about that because – and I hear – I mean, that's it. The university has such an influence on this town. And because of the university, there's a lot of folks here who are more expert on more things than you would have in a quote-unquote normal town.
Right.
And also people who really have strong opinions and really want to get their 2 cents worth in there and are a lot of times better informed than in a typical town, so that it makes the whole thing, job of being mayor or being on the council, I think, much more complicated.
Yeah, to say the least.
and challenging, yeah. I guess.
Well, and that's why that time that's outside of meetings is often consumed with work of the mayor and council, because I am, you know, that time outside of meetings, I'm actually having other meetings with people of the kind you're just talking, that you're talking about.
These,
experts in environmental science who just live here and happen to be citizens of our community, people who are traffic engineers in their day job, but you know, they're just citizens of our community and have some feedback and some observations to make about the way we're doing things, or you know, any number of issues. We have an expert, I'm sure, somebody who's written a book about it right here in our community.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, for example, too, when it came to a head right towards the end of my time as mayor, you know, this whole last year, one of the big issues that I was dealing with in the mayor's office were issues around immigration and refugees and, you know, this national conversation that was going on around. And I just, as I always did when I was mayor, I didn't hesitate to step into the middle of the conversation, and so I did. The perfect example of why we should embrace, I think, all people, and we should be true, if we're going to be true to our values, that we need to be true to our values when times get tough, like these are. Our values were ratified when Aziz Sanjur won the Nobel Prize. You know, in chemistry,
yeah. I mean,
an immigrant from Turkey,
yeah.
Southeastern Turkey, near the Iraq-Syrian border. Okay, he has been lived here as an immigrant, but he's lived here since the 80s. Muslim, winner of the Nobel Prize. Boom, and right in the middle of that conversation, I think it's just one of the best examples of how we have. To be true to who we really are, we need to recognize the home that we helped create for Dr. Sanjur and his wife Gwen, and how welcoming we are as a town, and that we are a better place because they're here. And well, darn it, the world is a better place because he's here now, and that certainly has been ratified. It was really kind of amazing how all that kind of happened all at the same time.
And that's a great example of not only do we have a lot of educated and well-informed and very smart people, more than the typical southern town or any town, but also it's very, because of the university, it's a very internationally has that whole international aspect.
Oh, yeah.
People are here, students, professors from all over, and that's a prime example from Turkey. You can
walk from the town commons in Carrboro to the post office on Franklin Street and hear 4, 5, 6 different languages being spoken as you walk down the street.
Yeah.
In some small town, 60,000 people in North Kakalaki. I mean, that it really, I think, underscores just how special a place we are.
And that makes it all the more challenging to be in a leadership position in a town like this, because people, I'm sure, are always challenging you.
Well, yes.
And wanting to give you their 2 cents with how you think you should be doing your job or what they think needs to be done. And I'm sure it takes like a real steady person and a person that you have to have a lot of self-confidence to be able to really to hold your own.
Right. Well, I'm sure my partner Matt would probably say yes, he's got plenty of self-confidence enough to do that. But you know, it is at times, like you say, it can be very challenging, and I wouldn't be being honest with you if I didn't tell you that there were times during my time as mayor where I was plagued with some self-doubt mm-hmm. about where we were going, what we were doing, how we should handle a certain situation. Mm-hmm. You know, like the Occupy movement, that period of time was one of those. Mm-hmm. When we've had high-profile crimes like the murders from last February in Findlay Forest, and then the longer things like, you know, like how can we be as a town, how could I as a leader of a council be true to my commitment to the town employees whenever we were going through the mm-hmm. recession in 2009 and 2010?
Yeah, it's and been hard.
Trying to make sure that we were protecting people who were protecting us.
Yeah.
You know, and that was, it was hard. Those were some really difficult times and difficult issues where it's hard to be completely confident you're getting it right all the time. And there are certainly things that, you know, boy, I wish I could have, you know, in hindsight, maybe adjusted or done some things different.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure. And, you know, with the recession, I mean, it's always a challenging job. But that is certainly, whether it's at the state or national or at this local level, to be in a deep recession the way we were mm-hmm. has makes a hard job even much harder.
Yeah.
In terms of weighing those things, in terms of taxes and what people can try to afford, in terms of income for the town employees
right.
and their health benefits, all of that's up for deep discussion and struggle.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, we want to be, and you know, as mayor, I wanted to be the leader of an organization that reflected some, you know, great hiring practices, being a good employer.
Mm-hmm.
And we're a state where our town employees can't organize and they can't have unions. Mm-hmm. And so how can we empower our employees? Well, you know, there are some things you can do and some things you can't, but if you really want to be, if you're going to be true to those values where you want to encourage organization of employees, you want to encourage them to, you know, be able to articulate what their needs are and communicate them effectively with the policymakers so that they can protect their own interests and their families,
mm-hmm.
Then you can't just put their benefits and their pay on the chopping block when times get tough. That's without right. having real conversations and without spreading that pain and making sure everybody understands that, you know, mm-hmm. that pain is felt everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of communities who either don't share our values in that arena or only give lip service to them, you know, we saw what happened to those municipal employees. I mean, there were layoffs all across North Carolina, all across the South, and in non-unionized cities. There were pay cuts and benefits cuts all across all throughout those kinds of mm-hmm. those cities. And fortunately, we weren't able to give raises, but we didn't cut benefits, we didn't cut pay, we didn't fire anybody.
Mm-hmm. That's a great accomplishment.
Yeah, wow.
And because also the other thing a lot of communities have felt forced to do is cut services. That's the other balancing act. You know, library hours being cut.
Mm-hmm. And we did scale them back a little bit, but we've brought them back.
But brought them back, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, it's what's so crazy is a community like Chapel Hill that is so relatively wealthy compared to its immediate neighbors,
mm-hmm.
unincorporated Orange County, Durham,
yeah.
you know, Pittsburgh, Burlington, you know, the Alamance County, Person County. We're the rich guys in the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Well, and we're importing our help, our town employees. They don't live in our neighborhoods. They don't live in our towns. They all come from Person County and Alamance County and Durham and Deep Chatham and some as far away as Wake and Greensboro to do work for the people of Chapel Hill to keep our houses from burning down, to keep our water supply clean and safe,
mm-hmm.
to keep our streets safe,
to educate our children.
Yeah, I mean, to make sure that tonight's work session goes smoothly and all the council members have their materials and their pretty little binders and
mm-hmm.
delivered at a time whenever the new mayor has demanded they be delivered, which I heard, which I'm sure wasn't received really well. You know, but, you know, those kind of they really sacrifice, you know, long commutes and no ability to organize. It's just, that's something I really wish I could have had a stronger impact on statewide. But I'm really proud of what our locally the council has done protecting its employees.
Well, the other thing that's made it difficult for all localities is that the state has a Republican legislature now that has made significant cuts to the university, to education. And at the same time that they're doing that, they are also trying to exercise much more control over what municipalities can do and not do. I mean, for all that they talk so much about freedom and liberty, it's amazing to me that they don't see the irony or the hypocrisy in absolutely tightening the reins on what municipalities can do. And you can probably give us a couple of painful examples.
Well, you know, demagogues rarely ever do see the irony in their comments. You know, I mean,
that's why I changed my idea. I thought that was too kind of word.
They rarely ever do. It's just, and they don't recognize their hypocrisy. To do so would undermine their, you know, grab for power. And that's exactly what's happened. I think part of the problem is that this legislature, irrespective of their ideology, many members of their, you know, have these ideologies are very contrary, I think, to the worldview of many people in Chapel Hill and Carrboro. They didn't have any local government experience. So many of them were just plucked off the street and put into the state legislature without any understanding of how government works. You know, even the basics, like, you know, I was a civics teacher in the 90s, and I used to teach about the three branches of government and the state, federal, and local government systems and how they all worked. I mean, you would swear that these folks didn't even – they couldn't have passed my ninth grade civics class when they were – back in 2010, 2011, when they took over the legislature, when they would file bills to – prepare for the future secession of the state so that we would be ready to print our own currency. I mean, those kinds of things were being filed in our state legislature. And it's just dumbfounding. You know, it's like, yeah, that's not how it was. Like, I don't know if they even researched the words of the oath they took, which is to uphold the Constitution of the United States before, you know, up and before and above every other interest. And well, that's it's harder to get a clearer example of how that print our own money. I mean, that's just it's very clear in the Constitution who does that.
I didn't remember that part, but I know they've wanted to tighten the reins on zoning and local architecture. I mean, talk about wanting to have your finger in micromanaging.
Oh, right down to our neighborhood planning. I mean, right now, tonight, I think even, certainly was one of our last meetings when I was mayor, and it's going to spill over here into January and February for the new council. But we're having to go into our neighborhood conservation districts, like North Side and Pine Knolls and Greenwood and Morgan Creek and others, and we have to remove some of the regulations that the neighbors, the people who live there, wanted to have in place to protect their neighborhoods. Some of them have to be stripped out.
Oh, really?
Because of these kinds of limitations that the state government has decided they don't want us to have power over. It's like they talk about local control, like you say, but as soon as, you know, and a lot of these bills became law because a particular developer in a town somewhere in someone's district said, hey, town blank is not letting me put, I don't know, purple shutters on these ugly houses I'm building. And so, you know, the legislator who was plucked off the street without any government experience whatsoever, who would have got an F in my civics class, files a bill. No local government shall have any control or regulate over aesthetic issues in their communities. And that's how that bill got passed. That's where our state democracy is right now.
Yeah, it's pretty scary, yeah. And I don't know from what I read that with the gerrymandering of districts that it's going to be hard to change that.
It is.
That's what's really scary, because you think, oh, if people are doing a job that a majority of people may not like, you know, there'll be that's a whole thing with democracy. We'll have elections and throw the bums out and let's get some new people in. But
I know what that's like. It's supposed to work everywhere. it's not going to work. And I think, unfortunately, not in the short term.
No, unless we can get that change. And I know there was a bill, and I don't know what happened with that to be able to have a neutral commission do the zoning, but I think that may not have passed, or I don't know.
No, and this legislature is unlikely to do so until they see their hold on some of their gerrymandered districts slipping, I think. Mm-hmm. We're going to have to get – one of the things that the Republicans had to do when they took over and redistricted in 2010 is, in order to get the supermajorities they were able to achieve, they had to create some districts that were kind of only marginally Republican, not these super Republican districts. There just weren't enough Republicans to do it. So they were successful at getting some super Republican districts, but a lot of kind of middle-of-the-road, leaning Republican districts. And they've been banking on holding those seats in order to keep their supermajority.
Okay.
But time keeps on ticking. It's now 2016.
Yeah.
And a lot of those districts have seen demographic changes. A lot of them are in and around our state's largest cities that are attracting people from other parts of the country. And they're once upon a time marginally leaning Republican districts that gave them the supermajority are starting to become truly moderate, and some maybe even leaning left to the Democratic side. So, and there's going to be – they can't
there's
fix it.
Hope?
Are you, though there is some hope.
Well, boy, I'm so glad to hear that, because I got very depressed when I read, you know, one of the political columnists, you know, in the last month or so. Mm-hmm. It sounded pretty dire. Well, that's very hopeful.
Yeah, I think there's reason for hope. But we have to be here in our enclave where Valerie Fouché, our great senator, and Verla Insko, our great House rep, are going to be safe forever. And Greg Meyer, as long as they want the seats, they're going to be able to stay. They're doing great work. We can't just sit back and be resigned to say, hey, we have great House reps and senators. We have to help.
Because they're marginalized if they don't have other people.
They need friends.
They need some friends.
Greg and Verla need some people to play with in the North Carolina House. And Verla tells me that they only need 4 seats in order to make sure that the House is not veto-proof, which means they'll have to start negotiating with a governor. And if their governor's mansion switches parties, then we have a governor who may veto some of this Republican legislation. And some, you know, if they can't override the veto, they're going to have to start negotiating, true negotiating, which, you know, gives Verla and Greg some leverage. Now, Val over in the Senate, I think she's going to have to tough it out for a while, because those districts are bigger. And so change in population has to be a little bit more extreme than you've seen it in some parts of the state. And it's going to take a while for them to be able to get the demographic changes in that in the Senate, on the Senate side, to see this kind of change.
So there is some hope for the House, but the Senate's kind of discouraging for a while.
Yeah, at least.
But
for
life
a while.
Goes on,
right?
And nothing stays static.
Yeah, you know, we've lived through worse times, too, right?
We haven't.
I mean,
I've lived down here since the 60s.
Yes, then you have certainly.
Yes, so.
I mean, there were times, that, you know, the good old days weren't
Jesse
all that
Helm
great.
Jesse Helm was one of our senators, you know. Of course, I don't know, Burr may not sound as bad, but they're not that great either, but.
But, you know, Richard Burr, he voted to overturn Don't Ask, Don't Tell. I mean, can you imagine Jesse Helms ever doing that?
true. So there, yeah.
So that would be marginally better.
Yeah.
And you know, we lived down here in North Carolina, in a time when Democrats, other than like Jesse Helms, won every single seat in every race, and we weren't, you know, and we had segregated schools, we had racial profiling by law enforcement, we had, you know, restrictions on women's reproductive health.
Yes.
You know, I mean, and Democrats were all doing that.
Yes. So. There's Democrats and right. that was way before when Lyndon Johnson said, "There goes the South," when
right.
he put the voting rights bill in. Mm-hmm. And that's where there's been a big change.
Yeah.
And so a lot of those old conservative Democrats are gone, or they've become Republicans. I don't know.
They right. may
have just changed party affiliation. So, okay, Dick has given us the signal that we got 2 minutes and then we have a station break.
Okay.
And we make some announcements, and it's time to sort of catch our breath and think of anything that we haven't talked about that we want to be sure to get into. Should we start now, maybe?
Sure. We might as well go ahead.
Okay. Yeah.
This is the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom show, the Wake Up Call, being brought to you over the facilities of WCOM, LP, Chapel Hill, and Carrboro. 100 watts of burning light bulb power getting into your living room if you're not too far away. However, you can always get us from friendly internet by going to the website of the radio station, which is WCOMFM.org, and click on there and you can stream the program live, whichever program's on the air.
Mm-hmm.
It won't always be us. Sorry about that.
But every Wednesday from 5 to 6 o'clock, it is us. It's the wake-up call. So
right.
That's particularly the time we want you to stream.
You want to tell – we should tell them about People's Channel, too.
Yes,
right?
I was just thinking that.
Yes. There's a station known as the People's Channel, which you can get on Channel 99.
A TV station.
Yeah, TV station that you can get off the cable air if you're in
Chapel Hill. It's Channel 8.
AT&T UVerse is 99.
Okay.
And
Time Warner Cable,
right.
In Chapel Hill it's Channel 8, and what is it in Carrboro?
It's four.
And what is it? I don't know what it is in Durham, but it's
I don't know what it is either, but if you're in Durham you could try to find out.
Right.
And I just want to mention, we have Emily O'Hare. We talked about ourselves. We have Emily O'Hare doing the video camera. And Emily, are we in the right position? Do you want us? Are we okay? You can motion.
I was going to put your microphone down a little bit.
Okay.
So you can see my face. I'm not taping them.
Okay. And so, where am I? I lost track of thought. Okay, I just wanted to mention that Emily's here. I'm Lori Hoyt. This is Dick Paddock. And I want to mention again our guest name, because I've been given feedback that sometimes we don't, people come into the middle and they don't know who's talking. Yeah. And we have Mark Kleinschmidt here, who's just stepped down as mayor and is...
Of Chapel Hill.
Not
Carrboro.
Of Chapel Hill. And we're delighted that he has a little time to get on our radio show, and we're talking about Chapel Hill politics and what it's like to be a mayor here. And also we have a couple of announcements.
I want to announce, first of all, that we are underwritten by Internationalist Bookstore.
Yes.
On Lloyd Street here in Carrboro now. And we're very happy that they have been our only underwriter for all of our time on the air, which is longer than I can remember, but it's probably in the neighborhood of 7 or 8 years.
Wow.
I know.
Yeah.
Been going for a long time.
Forever.
Well, getting a little older, a little wiser, a little tired, but we're going strong. Okay.
Okay, so you had some announcements.
Well, okay. So Internationalist Books, please go visit them. They've got great books, but they're also a good community resource. And the announcement I want to make is that we had Judy Hogan on from Chatham County just a few weeks ago, who's a writer and an activist. Right now she's chair of the Chatham County struggle against Duke Power dumping their coal ash in Chatham County. She lives in Moncure. And that's right where they're
right where
the trucks are rumbling by, 20 to 40 of them a day, with this coal ash. And so they're having a fundraiser that will be a lot of fun this Sunday, January 10th, in downtown Moncure. It's going to be a gospel sing. You might want to go. Bring your checkbook, bring a few bucks with you, and it's going to be at 2:30 Sunday afternoon, and it's going to be at Mount Olive Missionary Baptist Church, and it's in downtown Moncure, which is not a huge downtown, so it's, if you want to look on your GPS, it's on old number one, highway number one. Somehow it's old number one, Moncure. So I think it's going to be wonderful, and it's in the afternoon, 2:30 in the afternoon, and they're going to have gospel choirs from several churches, and they're going to be minimal on speeches. I think the whole word is not a lot of talking, but a lot of great music.
A lot of singing and a lot of giving.
A lot of singing and a lot of, joyful singing. So several of us from Wilf are going to go. We're inviting all of you to go. You can look up how to get there. It's on. You got to go through Pittsburgh from here, and then you can figure it out from there on. Look on a map.
Right.
And so we hope that a lot of our listeners will go and support this. So I guess that's
all we have at this point. Yeah.
Yeah.
Unless you've got something now. Okay.
Yeah. Except the NAACP did not meet last Saturday and will be meeting this Saturday, which is what, the 9th?
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll be meeting this Saturday from 1 to 2:30. They changed it because of the holiday.
Right, and Wolf will still be on the 2nd.
We will still be Saturday morning, so it's going to be a long day. Saturday. Wolf in the morning and the NAACP in the afternoon, so bring your peanut butter sandwich to get through the day. Okay, so we're back with our guest, Mark Kleinschmidt, and we're talking about his just been about 6 years mm-hmm. as mayor, but 8 years if you count time on the council.
Right, so 14 altogether.
Oh, 14 altogether.
Can you believe
that? Not contiguous.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Well, it's time for a break.
I know. It is. I'm really feeling that, yes, it is, now that I have the break.
Yeah.
Feeling, yes, it is time.
Yeah. So, like Mark said, it's time to start really thinking of his retirement.
Right, my real retirement.
Your real retirement.
My real future.
Your future. Yeah. Putting your energy into maybe your own life for a bit.
Yeah, for a little while.
14 years of service to the community, you're entitled.
Oh.
Definitely entitled. Yeah.
You know, over the years, you know, I was always so driven to and always, you know, adjusted my life and schedule to what needed to be done here in mm-hmm. Chapel Hill, whether it was council meetings or meetings with citizens, people who needed me for any reason. I was always adjusting my personal and mm-hmm. professional schedules to mm-hmm. accommodate it. It brought me nothing could have brought me more joy, though. I mean, I loved the job. But now that that is done, I do, looking back, see and can identify how that kind of got in the way of some other things. You know, building a family, being in, you know, I'm almost 46 years old. I'm supposed to be at the peak of my earnings years. Well, that's not happening right now. So, you know, I have to somehow make that happen. And we have to You know, and I have to go back and adjust.
I guess mayors don't get pensions, do they?
Oh, no.
You know, but maybe I'd like to go back a little bit, speaking that you're 46, you spent 14 years in service to this community. I think I remember you started out as a teacher. You mentioned your civics class, a history teacher.
Right.
Is that what
social studies?
Social studies. And then you went to law school after that?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And you've been a lawyer, a civil rights lawyer?
That's right, yeah. I started working out of law school at the Center for Death Penalty Litigation.
Oh, that's what I tried to remember, yeah.
And the first client I ever began representing right out of law school, I'm still representing him today. He's still on death row.
Oh, my gosh.
And the good news is that, you know, during the 2000s, there were a lot of executions, and he wasn't one of them. But I have represented as many as, I think now it's been like 11 members of North Carolina's death row. Today I have 6 that I currently represent. Only one of them was executed. The others have received relief. One of them, I actually believe that there's a lot of innocence undiscovered and actually not being listened to innocence, not only on death row, but in North Carolina's prisons, because our system, it's hard to have a lot of confidence in our criminal justice system when you work with people who are in prison or on death row, because you see all these errors that have occurred. But significantly, though, I did have one client in particular who was exonerated.
That must be such a thrill.
It was amazing.
For them and for you representing them. Wow.
Before I was representing Levon Jones back in when I was still in law school, he was within 3 days of being executed. And it took 10 more years, but it's for him to get out in 2006, but he is now at home in Duplin County with his family and contributing to the life of his community there in a positive way. And there's a book I always encourage people to read, because not only does it tell the story of Levon Jones, but it tells the story of me and what I did with the team I worked on. And I was just part of a team. I was one of two attorneys, and it's called The Last Lawyer. And I recommend it. I know the library has a copy of it. And I suggest, you know, I always encourage people to read it. If you're interested in the way death penalty representation operates in North Carolina, it really pulls back the curtain on a lot of the problems with the system. And I was proud of the outcome, of course.
But, And that's the kind of work that also takes a lot of energy, you know, a lot of your soul. And so you're still doing that.
I still am, yes. And I expanded my practice. Now, I'm not at the Center for Death Penalty Litigation any longer. I left there in 06. And from 06 to 2012, I was the executive director of another organization called the Fair Trial Initiative, where I continued my representation of people on death row, but added work to teach and coach young lawyers into being great criminal defense attorneys, and so we could have a group of lawyers who were doing it right from the beginning, you know. Mm-hmm. And I did that for 6 years.
So passing on hard-won knowledge of how to do this, mentoring these younger ones.
Right. It was great work. And now they're doing great work all across the country and here in North Carolina and here in Chapel Hill. And really proud of them.
Yeah.
But I went into private practice in 2012. And my death penalty work, I work with folks who are not on death row but are in prison on similar kinds of issues. I've done some work with people with disabilities, particularly children seeking to get accommodations from school systems. Mm-hmm. I've done a little domestic work, a few divorces, which are interesting, and it's very different being in private practice, because somebody walks in the door of calls, you don't want to say no, you want to figure out how you can help them, right?
and but that to build a practice does take time and energy and making contacts and, you know, setting up an office or trying to figure out, you know, how to do without an office and do it out of your home, whatever. All of it takes time and energy. And as mayor, where there's, and especially in this town, as we talked about in the first part of the show, how demanding the job is, that it's really hard to give your practice or your work any other. You, like you're saying, you always accommodated your personal and professional work outside of being a mayor around your duties as mayor.
Right.
And you had the flexibility to do that, but that's hard to really build a solid practice.
It really is. So now that's why it's time to build. But, you know, I have some great mentors in my practice. The firm that I joined is, the name is Tin Fulton Walker and Owen. A lot of folks might not know that name, but they may know a lot of the lawyers that are part of it. Because,
and what's the name of it again, you might want to say?
Sure. It's Tin, T-I-N, like Fulton, Walker, and Owen.
And,
our home office is in Charlotte, but we have virtually merged, not completely, but we virtually merged with the old firm, that Adam Stein's old firm, Ferguson, Stein, Chambers, Wallace. And so a lot of those lawyers who led the fight for desegregating our schools in the 60s and 70s, who led the fight in the 90s on racial gerrymandering of congressional districts, who continue today to Adam, you know, continues today to represent the side of light and good against these redistricted, these poorly districted and racially gerrymandered districts that we're all working under right now. You know, it's amazing to be in their company every day.
So you're getting mentored from some of these older, experienced.
The greatest lawyers have ever walked the faces of the planet. And so they've been very patient with me while I've been doing service for our community.
Yeah.
They've been teaching me a lot. And
yeah.
I couldn't be, you know, prouder. When I was in law school, I actually interned for Ferguson and Stein, the old firm, Adam's firm. And I was so intimidated by him. And now his office is next to mine, and I can just yell at him. And now I'm like, you know, it's, you know, intimidating, you know. And now I'm his, you know, I'm his law partner. It's just it's just amazing to me that that's
you growing up.
Yeah, I guess so.
We're talking with Mark Kleinschmidt, talking about as he's building his personal life now, or having time to put some energy into giving it a boost, and that's pretty exciting.
Yeah, it is.
So this is a new and exciting phase of your life.
It is, and you know. And with the, with this, these attorneys,
being
I can still do.
Partners with Adam Stein.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're not, and I'm so glad to hear you're not a lone ranger, that, you know, you're in with a team, and that makes such a difference.
Oh,
than,
yeah.
Than trying to be all by yourself. It's great to have company.
Oh, it certainly is.
Comrades in the trenches.
Mm-hmm. And you know, William Simpson, who's also here in our Chapel Hill office, he used to be the attorney for the ACLU. And you know, anything that walks in the door, you know, we can. We just there's always some interesting take on it that they have, you know, on almost any issue or any case, and I've learned so much. But, you know, also I've had time for my personal, you know, just a personal life, which has been fun. You know, I mean, I have the most patient boyfriend in the entire world. Who is
he a lawyer too?
He's not. He works in finance.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Well, we need those folks, don't we?
he used to work.
Pay the rent. And
right. Yeah, you know, when we met, he was working for Planned Parenthood.
Oh.
And working,
so he's got a social.
Making law all those big bucks, right? But he shares my social
that's great.
Values. And,
that's great.
And so it's always been great having a partner.
How long have you been
tolerated
together?
About 3 years now.
Oh, it's new.
Yeah, still new.
It's still the sort of the honeymoon phase.
That's right. Still haven't had the question popped yet. So,
let us know.
I will. Yeah, it'll be fun. If I start wearing a ring, you all know. But it's been great sharing this time, you know, these last few years with him, because they were some of the most exciting and most challengingly personally challenging times, you know, going, you know, I mean, in 2013, I was unopposed for reelection, you know, and I was, you know, and he was like, well, this is great. They love you, you know, walking in. And then this was a very different election year. Yeah. And obviously for various reasons.
Just
and
many,
then,
many by surprise.
Right.
We're talking to Mark Kleinschmidt. We're talking about life, love, and politics.
Yeah. you know, and some difficult things like when Dea and Razan were killed over in Findlay Forest, and her sister, that was just one of the most difficult days. That one day was just, I just will never forget the day that happened. Well, the evening and then the following day that happened. It was just, it's almost hard to put into words how those 24 hours, 36 hours were like.
I think the whole community, along with you and all of us, were in a state of shock that this could happen here. You always think it's someplace else.
Yeah. You know, and the president, I mean, he referenced it yesterday, and or was that earlier today? It was yesterday. Mm-hmm. In his efforts to try to use his executive authority to do something about the ease with which people can get guns, you know. And that was also one of the central, like, larger issues of my time as mayor, was my work on illegal guns. And mm-hmm. I was, at one point, I became kind of like the de facto national spokesperson for the mayors against illegal guns. I appeared on Fox, and I was the fair.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I got to tell you this story. So I was in the studio at Fox in Washington, and I was the second person they were going to talk to about guns. This was right after Newtown, I think. And they had Rudy Giuliani on as a mayor, having been a mayor, and talking about Second Amendment rights and how, you know, we can't just pull the guns out of the hands of, I don't know, blah, 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 blah. And he must have, his segment must have been 6 or 7 minutes, a long time on television.
That is a long
yeah.
time.
And then they brought me on. I think I had 90 seconds. But that was the fair and balanced part of the of the program that day.
Oh, boy.
My time on MSNBC was much better.
Surprise, surprise.
At the same day, actually, I did Melissa Harris-Perry's show, weekend show, and she had me on with a few other folks on a panel, and it was a much more welcoming environment. But, you know, the folks over at MSNBC didn't challenge me and ask me tough questions and engage in difficult conversations. It was just truly fair. It wasn't 6 minutes versus 90 seconds.
They wanted to hear a little bit of what you had to say.
Right. So, you know, those kind of things were kind of odd. Those were kind of the funny things that happened. I still have a picture of me sitting on the Fox News set, you know, the Fox and, you know, all the TV cameras. And they have there's a woman who works in the control room at that studio, who went to school here and knew me as her mayor, and she was just beside herself, excited that I was there. And I was like, "What are you doing here?" And she's like, "It's just work. This is work. You take it when you can find it." So
I don't want our time to run out. Before, I just want to give you a chance to say, I think we've been touching on all of it. What do you feel like your best moments or your finest or your legacy? I think you've been talking about this the whole time, but I don't know if there's any summing up you want to do or any major regret or.
Well, there are some things I wish I'd have done differently.
Okay.
You know, when I became mayor, even though I had eight years on the council, when I was on the council, I was that guy would take a shoe off and pound the desk, you know. I was that, you know, firebrand, you know, I'm the champion, you know. Sally used to say, "It's okay, Mark, you're the conscience of the council. That's what you are." And, you know, I was like, you'd be real proud of that. But then I was like, Wait, is that just is she marginalizing me?
Patronizing. Yeah.
Here, yeah. But she was only with the best of intentions. But you know, that was kind of funny. But you know, when you move from sitting on the side where you only speak up when you want to, or you're really passionate about something, and then to moving to the middle where you have to manage every conversation, you can't just take your shoe off and down the table every night. Yeah. You have to be thoughtful. You have and thoughtful in different ways. I used to always try to make sure that our council members were successful in whatever their interest area mm-hmm. was, and try to find a way to help them show that they're mm-hmm. adding value. And but it was that was really challenging. And so early on, you know,
takes
I think
a different kind of maturity, doesn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, you know, I was
sort
know,
of like being
I was
a parent,
a young 39 years old at the time. And,
it's all relative, isn't it?
It's all relative. But you know, Howard Lee was younger than me when he was mayor. Just for the record, a lot of people forget that because he is so wizened. You know, I mean, you think of Howard as so like always having been like the great elder statesman. No, he was younger than me when he was mayor. So.
Okay,
but because of that, like lack of that transition from firebrand to facilitator, I think I would have handled some things a little bit better and a little differently. My relationship with my one of my colleagues who ran against me the first time, you know, in 2009, that was a very tight election. Mm-hmm. I really wish that after that election, I would have handled our relationship better mm-hmm. because I think we missed some opportunities to really, as I said, I always wanted my council members to be successful. Mm-hmm. But after that race, which was so marked with so much acrimony and animosity.
I don't remember that. Right?
It was tight. It was the closest race ever in Chapel Hill. Really? I only won by 106 votes over Matt Schakowsky.
Right?
And he is actually very, very bright, intelligent person, a lot to offer the community. But because we'd been engaged in this like six month battle, it was difficult because he was still on the council. Mm-hmm. You know? I wish I would have handled that better and been able to help him be more successful
personally. And I got to like
personally.
Him a lot on the council. I was surprised. He has a reputation, I think, as being a little more conservative. But in different things that came up when I was there, I would be impressed with
absolutely
things he had to say and agreed with him more than maybe with some others who I thought of as more as allies. And I was really
– yeah.
Yeah, he really –
A lot more going on there than I think a lot of people
gave him credit for,
particularly during the campaign that year. But it's nice to hear that, you know, subsequent to that, we all were able to learn and appreciate that. So that certainly is one of my big regrets. The whole Occupy, the way that was handled, I regret that.
Really? Like, what do you wish you'd done differently?
Well, the whole, like, Yates stuff.
Oh.
I think could have been handled, should have been handled better. You know, we started off being very accommodating. And I took my leads from my friends who were other parts of the country, like Gene Kwan in Oakland and Sam Adams in Portland, good friends of mine. And we in Chapel Hill, we were like three of the cities that were like, okay, here's some space for you, mm-hmm. you know, set up. You know, well, let's get some porta potties out. Let's make sure there's health and welfare checks and make sure everybody's staying healthy and everybody's staying safe. Let's, mm-hmm. You know, we were doing that like Portland and Oakland were. And then in all three cities, all three of those, Chapel Hill, Oakland, and Portland, it all fell apart. Mm-hmm. We all stepped in it at some point. And here in Chapel Hill, it was the response to the Yates building takeover. Now the Carolina Ale House, if you're new to the area. you know, I had just come back from out of town when that was happening. And see, a lot of people believe that, particularly if you live in another city, a big city, you think that the mayor is like the king of the city. But I'm not the king of Chapel Hill. I mean, I don't tell
and I think
police
Chief
what to
Blue
do.
Was out of town.
And,
to,
yeah, Chief it, Blue was at the was, coast doing a marathon or something. And so, you know, I think that, you know, I think we should have been, not that I know what I could have done better in that moment, because it was a really challenging moment and I didn't have the authority to direct the police in any way. So what I think I would have liked to have done better is in retrospect, because we had seen some problems that occurred in other cities, we should have anticipated that there may be difficult times, and we should have come up with protocols and have plans. Now, since then, we learned a lot from that. Mm-hmm. So today, if it would happen, we do have a plan. Well, mm-hmm. that plan, I think, should have been developed mm-hmm. before the incident happened. Mm-hmm. And so in retrospect, that's what I would have done.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
we would have had how can you not be regretful whenever you have a reporter who got handcuffed? Right? I mean, that's just what?
It was shocking.
Yeah. So
we won't relive that.
But it was very like uncharacteristic Chapel Hill day.
Yes, it was.
And being the mayor was like, oh my God.
I didn't know that you didn't have any authority over the police.
No. No. I don't, have the authority to direct the police action or anything like that.
Dick has given us 3 more minutes.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so
But I do have the authority to plan and make policy, and that's what we should have done before it happened.
So I don't want to end the program on regrets. What are you proudest of, or you feel the best about, or just maybe that – the stamina to
I did it. I got through it, right?
I
think that, we talked earlier about the recession and what it – and the challenges it did for other cities and how they kind of fell apart. I really believe – I'm most proud of the fact that during the recession, whenever people weren't investing in our community, there was no development activity, anything going on, that we took the time to do some community-wide planning. And we have a new comprehensive plan. And instead of just having it be like a run-of-the-mill comprehensive plan that the planning board is in charge of and that kind of thing, I said to the manager, I want a comprehensive plan. I want a comprehensive plan that talks about fire service and police service and economic development and, all these areas of town function, transit, not just what our land use rules should be, which mm-hmm. is the way most comprehensive plans are.
Mm-hmm.
Because I thought they were in the new reality, this new modern time, this new economy, all these interests are going to be linked together much more closely than they were in the old economy.
Yeah.
So that's what we did. And we had 10,000 people participate in that process. We were meeting in school cafeterias that were standing room only. I was going to bars and taverns and restaurants on Franklin Street, telling young people who would never think to engage with the local government, I want to know what you think about this, What is the best weekend bus schedule we could do? How high should buildings be?
So the civics teacher was still still part of you.
Yes,
still,
absolutely.
As mayor, that's great.
And we have this great plan now.
Yeah.
And a lot of the products from it have made some people uncomfortable. I understand why, because it's changed. It certainly has changed. But I think we've set ourselves up to be not just sustainable, but to be resilient, meaning that even if there aren't – today we have experienced a time where we had challenges that we never knew were going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And today we are better prepared for the unknowns mm-hmm. of the future than we ever were before.
Mm-hmm.
And I think and I hope that that's the legacy I left.
Well, that sounds
thank you very much.
And I just want to thank Mark Kleinschmidt for being on the show and hearing all about his 14 years of public service, 6 as mayor, and wish you well on now building and having more time for your professional life and your personal life. And this is the Wilf's Wake Up Call, and I'm Lori Hoyt, and Dick Paddock and Emily O'Hare, we're a team.
Yes, we're a team, and we have...
Oh, and next week, do I have time to say next week we're going to have Renee Price on?
Okay.
Oh, cool.
Renee Price. Yeah. Great.
Yeah. We're gonna have our political month or two here.
Sustainable Jack. For the Home Power Hour, Wednesdays at 10 a.m. here on WCOM LP, Chapel Hill, Carborough, your community radio station.